Welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free call-in number for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, followed by the number 8. Or, if you're currently, recently, or about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Anybody who's ever been afraid to walk through the bad part of town should realize that many homeless people live in it all the time. They live there without resources and often without police protection because many police departments won't protect homeless people. We'll take a look at how homeless people cope, build networks, and set up strategies to survive right after this.
Poetry is the expression of the soul, and homeless souls are no different than ours. These poems are the expressions of their life experiences.
Heather Blanchard, mental health. What I know and what I hope for are two different things. The knowing is what makes me crazy. You ask so much of me and offer so little in return. You tell me to trust you and trust the system, that maybe it won't be like last time. You ask me to give my all for vague promise. You are the one that's crazy. The leper. Their eyes say I am an imposter in their clean, orderly world. Who am I to try to fit in with my funky hair and torn-up jeans and my unwanted point of view? They nod to each other and smirk. Their know-it-all smiles say that there is something inherently wrong with me, an inner leprosy that I will never be able to shed. The sound of water. The rain plops into my coffee and puts out my cigarette. I drop it in the gutter with the others, and they crowd each other like boats on a river. My wool coat gets heavy and weighs me down. My spirit would like to float above these clouds, but there is nowhere to go. So like water, it flows downhill into the sewer with the spent cigarettes. Nightshade. I wish I was as clever and conniving as you make me out to be. In actuality, my ass is in a tailspin, and I feel like I've caught fire and can't blow it out. But never mind. Oh no, I'll get by. And even if I can't, I won't tell the likes of you. You are the nemesis that thinks I'm yours, the bitter apple of irony that calls itself sweet. The rotten calls itself pure. I am your scapegoat, the Eve of Eden, the fly in your nectar. Well, excuse me for living.
The Homeless Woman's Prayer by Storm. The homeless women. We are the mothers. We are the sisters. We need opened eyes, help to stay from the arms of harm's clutches. You are the mothers. You are the grandmothers, and we are left to cry for help, for what you have that we have not. Thank God you are safe. We have to live on the streets, scared to death is the fact and the key word. You have a locked door, we do not. You have showers, we have few. You can keep the bugs from your hair. We are infected with little choice. We are your wives. We are your sisters. We are your mothers. We dodge guns. We dodge knives. And sometimes we dodge rape. God, give us hygiene. Please, God, help us stay clean. And if you have the time, keep us safe. We do not want to live in crime-filled streets. God, please get us out.
Homeless, author unknown. Under a metal awning, over a deck in North Baltimore, a house sparrow feeds chicks a wriggly worm. Following age-old instinct, father prances on the rail. Chirrup, chirrup, chirrup. In a locked building above a desert north of San Diego, a hand puppet feeds a box-hatched chick a wad of processed horse, following its human manipulator. Father squats on concrete slab. Vulture soaring beyond bar stockade, one the successful fruit of unthinking nurture by millennia of mothers, Surely they bred wild, if rare, in Europe's woods, before humans changed the world to sparrow land. The other, an effort by scientists, ornithologists, ecologists, embryologists, ethologists, neonatal metabolism gastroenterologists. Once condors bred wild, if rare, on California cliffs, before humans changed the world to sparrow land. One familiar and sightly pest, take a broomstick to the nest. The other few have ever seen, downcast men will work for food signs, pay for research that might extend Pleistocene scavenging a few decades. Who counts in our world? Who decides whose is quality of life? Does God cut the checks in Washington, or sit on the deck in Baltimore proclaiming, chirrup, 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 to his creation?
This land is your land. This land.
Welcome back to the 2005 Homelessness Marathon, coming to you live from the parking lot behind the Columbia House Shelter in New Haven, Connecticut. I'm your guest host for this hour, Carrie Seed. If you're just joining us, the Homelessness Marathon is a 14-hour live broadcast. We broadcast from outside in the elements. I can see my own breath right now. I'm bundled in many layers, and I'm sitting inside a plastic tent, which is being ravaged by wind and an icy rain. And why am I here? Well, we're all here. It's a collection of many volunteers throughout the country and throughout Canada, and a collaboration of the public media system to bring you and to bring all of us a higher level of consciousness about the issues surrounding homelessness in our lives. This hour, we're going to talk about community building and safety on the streets. Best-selling author Robert Putnam, in his book Bowling Alone, talked about the decline in civic participation in American life that's been happening in the United States to every generation since World War II. But at least in one instance, which we're about to hear about, that has not proven the case. We're going to hear about some homeless people up in Portland, Maine, who are taking matters in their own hands, banding together, trying to strike back to create, to make the streets a safer place for them. On any given night, 750,000 people in America are homeless. My co-host Steve Houston spent some of the best years of his life on the streets. Steve was intermittently homeless from age 12 to age 44. Over those 32 years on the streets, Steve became an expert in survival. But 2 years ago, Steve Houston made some changes in his life and got into stable housing. So he decided to put his knowledge of survival on the streets to use by joining the consumer advocacy group at Preble Street, a Portland, Maine resource center for people experiencing homelessness. Steve, welcome to the show. What can you tell us about what you do as a consumer advocate?
Well, thank you for having me, Carrie. The Consumer Advocacy Project works on systemic changes to issues that directly affect the homeless in Portland, Maine, and throughout Maine. We work on issues ranging from shelter policies to, as you know, we're working on hate crime legislation right now.
And what in your experience on the streets led you to this position?
Well, one of the greatest assets I came away from my on and off years of homelessness were both being a survivor and knowledge of the system. So giving back that knowledge of the ins and outs of the systems, the corners you can take, and knowing the players in the system was a great benefit to give back.
32 years is a long time to spend on and off the streets. You're lucky you survived.
Absolutely. It's, being homeless for long periods of time is can be a harrowing experience at times. And you learn to be a survivor. And that's one of the major points that we all live with as being homeless is we're all survivors.
Tell me a little bit about the Maine Center for the Prevention of Hate Violence. They just released a 96-page study of violence against Maine's homeless. Can you talk about some of the people involved in that study and what you learned through that study?
Right. The director of the Center for Prevention of Hate Violence, his name is Steve Wessler. And he is a former assistant attorney general with the attorney general's office here in Maine. He worked on hate crime law for around 20 years. He's pretty much an expert in that field after 20 years. The Center for Prevention of Hate Violence was part of the University of Southern Maine here in Portland, and now they've gone into their own nonprofit. But
can you talk a little bit about the scope of the problem of violence against the homeless?
Absolutely. We've noticed over the last, we've been working on this about 18 months, that it is overwhelmingly abundant to us that the homeless have been victimized more and more and more recently with violence targeted at them just because they're homeless. These assaults range from people being pelted with rocks while canning to a man actually being stabbed twice while sleeping underneath a bridge here.
Wow, did you ever experience anything like that in your years on the streets?
Absolutely. As far too many know, violence is part of being homeless. And panhandling is part of being homeless. And I was panhandling one night, and one guy just walked up to me and said, you know, you're a worthless bum, and punched me in the face. And incidents like this happen far too often.
Wow. I'd like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. I'm going to throw open the lines right now. Our numbers are 877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody followed by the number 8. 877-NOBODY-8. And if you're experiencing homelessness right now, or if you're about to or have in your past, we've got a special line held open for you. That number is 866-LEFT-OUT. That's 866-LEFT-OUT. Looks like we've got a call right now. I'm going to go to Sarah from Jamestown, New York. Sarah, hello, you're on the air.
How are you doing, son?
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I was just going to kind of comment. I've been listening to the program. I'm originally from Illinois, but I'm a truck driver and just kind of passing through. So what I was going to say is I heard one of the callers earlier say something about you can't live off of $7.10, I believe is what she said. And, well, the only reason I bring that up is because I've lived in an area that, you know, you get paid $5.35 an hour, and, you know, it's true, it's really hard to live off of that. But then I looked into going to truck driving, and there's a lot of companies out there that will pay your way through school as long as you stay with them for a year. And so, I mean, that being said, it was kind of like a gateway and opened a lot of things for me, because first off, I didn't have to pay for rent or my electricity or anything like that because I was here in the truck. And I mean, my first year it wasn't so hot, but I mean, I think it was like 18,000, which is a heck of a lot better than what I was doing before. But I just kind of wanted to call in, and maybe people that would be listening might think about doing that, because there's so many job opportunities out in the trucking industry, and really there's a huge lack of drivers out here. And I mean, if in some way it might be able to help people out, I always throw that in.
Sarah, thanks for your call. Steve, any comments for Sarah?
Well, first of all, you know, when I know here in Portland, you have to make over $10 an hour. Wage has to be relative to what you have to pay for rent in an area. Here in Portland, rent is just skyrocketed over the past few years. But, you know, if truck driving would work for someone, that would be awesome. But a lot of people, truck driving just isn't an option, whether it be driver's license problems or the ability to get through schooling.
In your own experience, Steve, did you ever have any serious job opportunities? And if so, during your stint of homelessness? And if so, why did those not work out?
I have to tell you, you know, over my years of homelessness, you know, I did a lot of menial jobs. I washed dishes, I picked fruit, I worked in recycling plants, I cooked. It's really hard to keep a really good, stable job when you're going through problems that are, you know, mental health issues, substance abuse issues. it's tough to keep jobs, and it's tough to get a good job. So I was basically at the reaches of what I could find.
It sounds like you had a lot of complicating factors preventing you from really succeeding at work.
Absolutely, and I do know that in the homeless community we all have our own challenges, but mental health issues and substance abuse issues are very common.
Well, Sarah, I'd like to thank you again for your call. Again, our numbers are 877-NOBODY-8. That's 877 and the word nobody followed by the number 8. And if you're experiencing homelessness right now, or you have in the past, or you think you might soon, we're holding open the Left Out line for you. That's 866-LEFT-OUT, 866-LEFT-OUT. You're listening to the National Homelessness Marathon, and we're broadcasting live from the Columbus House shelter here in New Haven, Connecticut. Right now, looks like we have someone who stepped up to the open mic. Anthony, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right.
What would you like to say?
I have a couple of poems to recite.
All right, let's hear it. I love that.
They're self-explanatory, so just be all ears.
Okay.
Name of this one is Escape. I keep trying to escape the sadness of this world's madness, hypocritical political views that makes them win and everyone else lose. From the few choices left, there is little to choose. From the outside looking in, on the inside feeling the blues. I keep trying to escape this sadness, occasionally drinking away my pain to feel happiness. Sometimes it seems as if it's my only solution in this world of pollution, drug distribution and execution. So if anyone asks, my New Year's resolution is to pour more drinks to the revolution. That was Escape.
I like it.
I'm still trying to escape. Hopefully I'll be out soon, be free. Name of this one is Stupidity. Truthfully, there's no excuse for stupidity when ignorance is the cause of it all. The reason why people fail to tell the time the end is near. The world is full of fear, chaos, dictators living above the law, the cause of every flaw. When they supposed to correct, they neglect, only caring about their check, and be the first ones crying when people start dying because of snipers on their steps. Red alert, intense humidity, society's hurt. It's hard to find work, there is no excuse for this stupidity. So when it backfires in the faces of these backstabbing liars and people in high places, who's going to tighten the loose screws when they fire the last standing handyman with the pliers? Who knows, he might just quit after the government tries to take away or make him pay for his own health benefits.
Anthony, are you currently homeless?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been homeless?
A year and a half.
How are you surviving right now?
Part-time job, assistance from the state. It's hard. I'm used to working full-time construction, making good money. I had my own apartment. I was in a situation before. I worked my way up out of it, but I got laid off. I wasn't saving like I should have been, but that's my mistake. And, I thought I had it all figured out, but I just didn't, So this time around, I'll make it better, make it happen. I have one more poem to recite.
Okay.
The name of this one is The Matter. What's the matter? Everything's the matter. There's no time to chit-chatter. The situation we're facing is no joke, so it calls for no laughter. That only provokes and adds more fire to the smoke that would eventually consequently leave everyone choked. In this world that is a huge area of disaster with child molesting pastors, evil people hiding behind a church's steeple, all like needles in a haystack in one huge pasture, seeking refuge after the light shines on their work of Lucifer. Many will be found, some will drown in the polluted sea, trying to flee the wasteland called this country, tis of thee. It's a shame religious and political corruption is to blame for the hijacked planes and the drug lords importing cocaine. The truth hurts, it's inside work and the children are feeling the pain. Mother Nature has a headache from people making mistakes, and Father Time has no more time to wait. So extinction is our fate. That's the matter, absolutely everything.
Thank you for sharing those, man.
You're welcome.
I got Steve Houston on the phone here from Portland, Maine, and we've been talking about violence on the streets. Have you had any personal experiences with violence on the streets?
Yeah, I have personal experiences, all the time. It's like, trying to get myself out of the situation, doing positive things. Negativity always comes my way. It never fell. And, that's hard because when you walk in the right path and you're trying to do the right thing, and people trying to knock you off that path and knock you down and step on you, You know, it's hard because, you know, it's only so much a person could take. So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the best way to do it is fight back, you know, with your mind. But if someone's assaulting you and stuff like that, then it's a different story because, you know, guns, knives, and all of that stuff is real and it kills. You know, and I mean, it's a lot of pressure. You know, it's a lot of mental stress. You know, when I was working, you know, making good money, and I had just, you know what I'm saying, I was working my way up out of the situation before a couple of years ago. You know, I dealt with a lot of negativity from peers. You know, because, you know, but I worked for every cent I got, you know what I'm saying, and I deserved it. I had already been on the bottom, and I was working my way up from it because I was tired of being on the bottom. But, you know, it's like, even though I was working my way up and doing positive things, people were trying to knock me down. You know, I mean, it's a constant struggle.
Right. Right. So it sounds like you're always watching your back all the time. Is there any time, any time you can relax?
You know, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, I have peace of mind when I'm alone, or, you know, when I feel I'm in an environment where, you know, I ain't got to worry about all that, where there's not that many people around. But like when I'm in the streets, when I'm, you know, looking for a job, or when I'm out there in the streets, you know, around the public, you know, I got to watch my back because I got enemies who I don't even know, you know, people who don't even know me as a person personally on a personal level. You know what I'm saying? I don't know them on a personal level. They just have that hatred in them because, you know what I'm saying, they seen me, you know, when I was wearing nice clothes, when I was doing my thing, had my own apartment, working, going to work, coming back from work, and, you know, they envy that, you know what I'm saying? But they could have been doing the same thing. You know, instead, you know, they wanted to take their anger and negativity out on me. So, you know, I just got to be strong through it, you know?
I would like to comment on that. I'm watching your back. The homeless community in the United States has to watch their back. The homeless, when they walk the streets, have to look over their shoulders constantly, not knowing when and where violence can come upon them. The homeless community has to sleep with one eye open, not knowing what will happen while we sleep. So watching your back is a constant thing when you're homeless.
Thank you, Steven. Thank you, Anthony. Thanks for coming down.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Take care. You are listening to the National Homelessness Marathon. I want to give out our numbers one more time. 877-NOBODY-8. That's 877, the word nobody, and the number 8. that's our general purpose line, so call that no matter who you are or where you are. Join our conversation. If you're experiencing homelessness or you've recently been homeless or you're going to be homeless, call us at 866-LEFT-OUT. That's 866-LEFT-OUT. Right now we're talking to Steve Houston up in Portland, Maine. He is a consumer advocate at the Preble Street Resource Center, and we're talking about violence and the homelessness. Steve, what do you know about this series of videos called Bum Fights?
Well, they're pretty disgraceful. But what I do know that comes from videos like Bum Fights...
Can you just briefly tell our listeners what those are?
Right. Well, Bum Fights is a video that they've paid homeless people to fight, to do outrageous stunts. But one of the most appalling things on the videos is a thing called Bum Hunter, where a guy actually goes around and sneaks up on homeless people sleeping outside, pounces on them, duct tapes them, restrains them. You know, these are acts of kidnapping, and it's disgusting to see. But what I'd like to add is that we have found up here in Portland, Maine, that youths from high schools have viewed these tapes and have gone out and called themselves the Bum Fighting Crew, and on the premise of these tapes attacked homeless people. And I'm sure this is happening nationwide.
When I spoke with you earlier, you were talking about trying to get those tapes out of the video stores in Portland. Have you had any luck with that?
Absolutely. We found that most video stores on a socially conscious piece did not carry these videos. We found a couple. We've written to one video store owner about how degrading and discriminatory these videos were, and she voluntarily immediately took the video off the shelves. There's more than one of these videos. There's a whole slew of them. But she didn't know, you know, how common that violence was and discrimination, and this brought it to light for her. So getting them off the shelf is a big thing for us.
Great. We're going to go to the phones here. We've got a couple of phones on the line and someone at the mic here. So we'll start with Jennifer from Pittsburgh. Jennifer, you're on the air. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer, could you please turn down your radio?
Excuse me, I'm from Bridgeport.
Pittsburgh?
Bridgeport.
Bridgeport. How are you tonight?
Bridgeport. Anyways, I'm being discriminated from... How are you tonight? I'm being discriminated from...
Jennifer, Jennifer, I'm going to have to ask you to turn down your radio.
Anyways, I'm being discriminated from moving out of... Anyway, I'm being discriminated for moving out. The apartment I'm staying at, they're making over 40 grand, like 42 grand over the rent money, and you know, taking a vacation and being greedy of it, and you know, claiming for me that I'm not able to move somewhere else and work somewhere else in a job as an individual. I'm being discriminated for being overlooked at a DMR, a departmental retardation, in order to work on medication, and they say, you know, they making lies on it and trying to brainwash me for not being like, they claim that that I can't do that, and they don't know more than I think I could do, should do, which I have the ability to do what I'm supposed to do.
Steve?
Yeah.
Do you have any response to that?
I didn't hear it clearly.
I had a hard time hearing that, yeah, as well. I think Jennifer was on a poor connection there. I'm sorry about that, Jennifer. Maybe if you have another phone, you could try to call us back. We'll squeeze you right in. Let's go now to Corinne from Portland, Oregon. She is formerly homeless. Corinne, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. I'd just like to say that sometimes when you become homeless, it's because of something that isn't, when you walk into a social service agency, people think that you automatically use some kind of illegal drug or you're drunk just because you are homeless, and that's not necessarily true. I mean, something can happen, and or you can have a natural disaster or just something you don't even want to talk about, and just because you end up that way or you happen to be that way at the time doesn't mean that you've done anything illegal or you've done anything wrong to be there. And it seems like even a lot of social service agencies, they assume that right away. And that's why it's so hard for me, because I didn't do any of those things. And when you walked in to get help, that seemed to be automatically what they thought of you. And it was really hard. And I did everything I could. I had to do everything I could to hide it, because I was so ashamed of it, and it even made me hate other people who were homeless, because when I looked at them, I said, that's not me, and it wasn't. And it's a harsh thing to say, but I feel like people who have homes, who hate homeless people, I felt like that because of the way that people put that stigma on you, that you automatically have something wrong or you've done something wrong to cause it to happen.
Thank you, Corinne. This brings to mind for me maybe one of the contributing factors for hate crimes against homeless people, which would be stereotypes. Any comments, Steve?
Absolutely. And stereotyping is a problem for the whole homeless community in general. You know, for every homeless person, there's a different cause. There's many causes for homelessness, whether it be domestic violence, substance abuse, or losing a job. And she mentioned national disaster. Natural disaster. But these are things that our project works on constantly, is the education of the general public and social service agencies. Just because you're homeless doesn't mean you're a drunk. Just because you're homeless doesn't mean you're a drug addict. She's absolutely right.
All right, our phones are blowing up here. Keep the calls coming. Our numbers are 877-NOBODY-8. That's 877, the word nobody, and the number 8. And if you're experiencing homelessness now or have in the past or think you might in the future, call us at 866-LEFT-OUT. That's your line, 866-LEFT-OUT. Right now we have Jimmy here at the open mic here at Columbus House Shelter in New Haven, Connecticut. We are broadcasting to you live. Jimmy, what's on your mind?
There's a lot on my mind. I've been
Can you get a little closer to the mic, please?
I've been listening to you, and I've been listening to what Corinne said just now about stereotyping homeless people.
Right.
You cannot stereotype us. I'm homeless. But don't stereotype me as being a drunk. Don't stereotype me as being lazy and not wanting a job. Don't stereotype me as just because I'm disabled, I can't function. That's wrong. Don't put me in a category as this. I got in a bad situation, and I got a landlord that didn't take care of what he was supposed to do. All right? My landlord let our house foreclose, and by him foreclosing it, and my sister dying at the same time, that put me in the situation that I'm in today. Right now, I'm working with several groups, and we're trying to stop the same situation from happening to the others. And by them finding out about me and me finding their groups and organizations, I'm really trying to help a lot of people go about, you know, getting help. All right, but that's not what I'm here to talk about right now. What I'm here to talk about right now is the dangers of being homeless and out on the streets. The dangers of being homeless and out on the street is this. You never know who's in the shadows, all right? You can lay, now there's several places in New Haven that at nighttime you shouldn't be because you never know who you're gonna encounter there, all right? And there's several places, anyway, it don't make no difference if it's New Haven, Washington, D.C., New York City, wherever you're at. There's always some place where even the police won't go, all right? And what I'm saying is this. If you're going to be there and you're homeless, get yourself another partner. Get to make sure that you're not by yourself. That way, if somebody runs up on you with a board or something, like at night, being on the green downtown, boys ride by with bikes, with baseball bats, and hit people upside the head for being homeless. That's wrong. How you know what that man did to get homeless? You know, you never know. You don't. But you have to let your heart decide. You have to pick the person and let his heart decide who you're going to trust and who you're not going to trust, who you're going to be around, and get somebody to do what you do. If you pray at night, get somebody else that prays with you. If you drink, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but get another buddy with you. Get a couple of them. So at least somebody be up when you sleep, you know?
A lot of things that you're dealing with, man, and I really commend you for having the strength to reach out to others in this time. You mentioned the groups that you're working with and also just relying on others for your safety and trusting each other. I think that's really cool, and keep doing what you're doing, man. Thanks for coming out.
I think I'm going to have to come back and talk to you a little later because I can't hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
That truck is...
The garbage man's here.
Yeah.
The garbage man has arrived at Columbus House, kind of preempting our ability to use the open mic here. So, Jimmy, why don't you hang with us for a while? We'll come back to you. You got some good stuff to say.
I'll be back out a little later on.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. Sounds like they're getting that dumpster taken care of. I'll take this opportunity to give out our phone number one more time, 877-NOBODY-8, 877 the word nobody, and the number 8 is our general purpose line. That's for anybody who has anything on their mind and wants to share it with us here on the 2005 National Homelessness Marathon. If you're homeless, you've been homeless, you're going to be homeless, call us at 866-LEFT-OUT. You won't be left out on our broadcast. That's 866-LEFT-OUT. And if you want to check out all the action, we've got two webcams here. It's pretty cool. You can watch online at homelessnessmarathon.org. That's homelessnessmarathon.org. We got a couple calls on the line. I'm going to go now to Tammy from Nebraska. Tammy, what's on your mind?
I just want to commend all the people out there that are homeless, that are suffering in such a way. I currently do have an apartment. However, I'm fixing to lose it. I have an education. I was married to a lot of money, and I wasn't happy. And my daughter's still up. Excuse me. I divorced the money because I wasn't happy. I was better off having my children. And now I'm fixing to lose my apartment because I have bad credit. I got a credit card. I got a credit card so I could support my children. And now my credit is bad. And to try and get an apartment is not in my best interest because my credit is so poor. However, I do have a job. And I'm soon to be homeless because my credit is crap. And I'm a single mother with two children. And when I was married, when I did have a lot of money, I worked for a homeless shelter, and I did the best I could to help these people, and I'm soon to be one of them.
You must be really worried about your kids, Tammy.
And listen to the past caller, Jimmy. I mean, you just don't know a person's circumstance. I mean, I've worked, and I'm a great mother, and I have crap credit because I got a credit card trying to support my children. And I'm soon to lose my apartment.
Tammy, you must be really worried about your kids. And
yeah, I mean, I have a job. I can pay my rent. And an aunt and uncle had co-signed my lease for my apartment, and my apartment runs out at the end of the month. And the manager says, well, you know, with your credit, we can't give you this apartment. But I have the money to pay her. But with my credit history, I'm going to be homeless, and I have nobody to fall back on. And, I mean, like Jimmy said, you don't know a person's circumstance. You know, I'm going to be homeless with two beautiful children, even though I can pay my rent, because I have crappy credit, I can't keep my apartment.
Tammy, I want to thank you for sharing your experience. It's becoming clear as we listen to more and more people's stories that money, credit, savings, poor job security are all huge factors in people's ability to keep a roof over their head.
And it's incredibly unfortunate when somebody is trying very hard to rectify their past and to pay their bills and still try and pay their rent because their credit is such crap, they kick them out of their apartment. And I will soon be homeless with two beautiful children.
I'm really sorry to hear that, Tammy.
And I can pay my rent just because my credit is so bad and I don't have somebody to co-sign for me. I'm going to be homeless.
I wish you the best. I hope you work things out. And we're going to have to run. I hope you'll listen in
Is there any way that you can have the prior person call me? I would really like to give him some encouragement.
Sure. Why don't you stay on the line and we'll have someone in the control room get your number. Thanks for your call, Tammy.
Thank you.
Steve, do you have any comments about what Tammy just said?
Absolutely. It's an amazing state of affairs when you have to get a co-signer to rent an apartment. That's just America's taking a wrong turn when it comes to housing. I used to always cringe when a landlord would say they had to run a credit report. I absolutely have bad credit, and I understand totally what she's going through, but she just has to prod along and negotiate with landlords. Negotiation is the key.
If someone in Tammy's situation came to see you as an advocate at the Preble Street Resource Center, is there anything you'd be able to do with her in terms of helping her out with her landlord?
Absolutely. The first thing we would do would set her up with a housing caseworker, someone specifically that would, you know, work on her housing issues. But landlords are always open to negotiation, and you don't lose anything by talking with them. I've talked to many landlords and gotten myself into places with bad credit. It's a matter of standing up for yourself and advocating for yourself.
So it sounds like Tammy may have some options to her available if she calls a place like the Preble Street Resource Center where you work?
Right, absolutely.
All right. Right now we're going to go back to the phones, and then we have someone again standing at the mic. Mike from Oswego, New York, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I've been listening to your show. It's really good, all the different aspects on all of it. Myself currently, I feel that I'm going to be homeless here real soon. I have a wife and three kids, a 10-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a little baby, 8 months old. I've been a union bricklayer for quite a few years now, over 20 years, and I lost my job with nothing to fall back on. So I had to go take a job. I went to the Social Service Department, and they, in order to give you benefits, they send you to a labor department in this part of the country, and if a job is there for you, you're capable of doing it, and you refuse it, you lose any of your benefits. Okay, so I had to take a job, which I'm not afraid to work, and it was in the field which I work, but the thing was, there wasn't the amount of hours there to earn the money. And I currently pay child support, $150 a week child support to a child in Florida. And if I couldn't make enough to pay the $150, what they do is they take 49% of your gross earnings. Then the taxes come out after that, which is what happened to me. The last check I got $34. The check prior to that, I got I got $82, and 90 of it was sent to the child support unit. So when I did go originally to the Social Service Department, I went in November, filled out all my paperwork, then brought my wife out there. I was kind of doing it behind her back. I didn't want her really to know what I was doing, but I could feel things were slipping. We were going to, you know, things were serious. We were going to lose everything. And then I brought her out with me about a week after that, and we went through everything, went through all their job services, filled out all their paperwork, did everything required in order for them to pay, try to get some rent paid for November. We're still filling out paperwork, going to these courses and classes. Here it is in December, and then more time goes by. I'm still being asked to fax this paperwork, that paperwork. Now we're at the end of December, and they tell me and my landlord they won't help with any rent that is in arrears. It wasn't in arrears when I originally went there in November, and now they wouldn't pay November, they wouldn't pay to December. And last month I was only able to pay partial of it. It's just the way things are set up that you can't get ahead. You can't even break even. Yeah, I keep being taken into court, and I've recently subpoenaed her into court to get an adjustment on my child support. And all I keep hearing is that I'm supposed to pay $150 a week. So no matter what way I turn, I just today spoke with somebody about work, and they offer $7 or $8 an hour. And they're going to, I know, if I work 40 hours, and I can't give them $150, they're going to take 49% of my wages, and it's a long distance, 40, 50 miles away to where I was going to work. I'm going to spend three-quarters of that money on gasoline, and I'm going to work all week long to make $20 or $30 to still not be able to pay my bills.
It doesn't add up, Mike. It's
not right. The system is not right.
It sounds like you're under a lot of pressure, man. How you holding up?
It's horrendous. It's horrendous. It is actually, at this point, I've talked with a lot of my family members. It's going to cause a divorce between me and my wife now. We're at each other all the time, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You know, when all these construction companies and everybody that I call and I talk to, well, yeah, it's a month or two, things are going to break. I don't have 3 days, let alone a month or two. You know, my landlord has been phenomenal. You know, and that's the only, I've been blessed that he's been such a good person, you know, about all this, but he's getting very impatient, you know, and I don't blame the man whatsoever, you know.
Mike, I'm going to have to go here, but I really just want to urge you to keep your head up, and you're not alone. It sounds like, from what I've heard tonight, there's a lot of other people out there going through similar sets of circumstances, and I hope you're able to find some people in your area who can help you out and keep on struggling, man.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. I'm going to quickly, Steve, go right to Keith, who's in the tower. We've got a man out here. Mind you, a gust of wind just nearly blew over the plastic structure I'm sitting in. We've got a man at the mic named Keith who's standing here with no coat on. Keith, what are you doing?
crazy.
What's on your mind, Keith?
I got a couple poems I would like to read.
Thank you. Lay them on us.
The first poem is called The Old Man. There once was an old man, and he had wisdom of many years. He was very strong, but the love of his son filled his eyes with many tears. You see, his son was a man of the world. His life was full of sin, and the old man fell on his knees, and he prayed for this madness to end. And lo and behold, there was a bright light, and he was shown a sign. And out of that light, there came a voice, and it said, "I'm here to ease your mind." The voice said, when your son was young, he never lived for himself. He tried to please all. And now no one can understand why this young man took a terrible fall. There was a lot of pressure bestowed upon him, and he couldn't get any rest. His heart was heavy, but still he tried, but he fell short of his very best. This cross was too much for him to bear, and he started to lose hope. And now no one can understand why this young man started to use dope. Your son loves you, and he cries every day. For all the pain he has caused you, he knows he has to pay. Your son is not the only one that is falling along the way. He's just one of the few who has taken out time to pray. And he knows that the life of this world is filled up with sin and a lot of lies. And he prays that this madness will end so you can wipe all the tears away from your eyes. And my the second poem would be called...
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Was that autobiographical for you?
It's a poem I wrote basically about myself when I was younger. And the old man happened to be my father. So...
What do you like about that poem?
What do I like about the poem?
Yeah.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
Can't say much more than that. What else have you got for us?
I got a poem called The Problem Solver.
I like it.
This morning I woke up with so many problems on my mind, and the answers to these problems I searched and I couldn't find. So I fell down on my knees and started asking God, please, to help me through this day in his own special way. To help lift these burdens that are weighing me down, because only within him could all my answers be found. I started telling him about all the things I've done wrong, and as I spoke with him, I started to feel strong. I told God that sometimes it's hard to walk that narrow line. I wanted to know if I was doing right, and if he could give me a sign. And all the guilt I had started to tear me apart, then the tears started to come, and something touched my heart. At that moment, I knew God was there, and he was listening to my very prayer. And after I had said amen, I knew just then I didn't have any more problems because God had already solved them.
Wow.
That's it.
Do you think, sounds like your faith is really helping you get through. Was that something that was important to you before you were down on your luck?
Yes, it was, very much so. I was brought up in the church.
And it's continued to be a pillar of strength for you, huh?
Yes, it will. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming out.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Steve, we've got another caller on the line here. First, I'm going to give out our number one more time. 877-NOBODY-8. That's 877, the word nobody, and the number 8. And our special line for people who have been homeless, are currently homeless, think they might going to be homeless, is 866-LEFT-OUT. That's 866-LEFT-OUT. Give us a ring. Keep those calls coming. We've got a lot of calls this hour. It's great to hear from everybody across the country, across Canada. We've heard a lot of powerful stories tonight. Come testify with your own. Right now, we're going to go to Clayton, back in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Clayton, how's Albuquerque tonight?
Oh, it's fairly warm.
Nice.
It's nice out here. I heard your program on the radio, and it made me think about a lot of things. I wanted to thank the man who was just reading his poetry before, and see, I agree with the man who was on the caller before when he said the system is really the problem. And I mean, in my experience is we know the reason that homelessness exists is basically because a landlord and that sort of relationship exists between people, and it's not a relationship that I think ought to exist. And as far as, you know, negotiation is all well and good, but negotiation implies something that takes place between equals in some sense. So if you're negotiating with a landlord and you don't have the power to negotiate with them, it's the same thing as like a lone individual taking on their boss by themselves. You get crushed. So you got to organize and you got to get with the people who, you know, whoever that be, your family, people in a similar situation, and we have to organize ourselves to get out of this and to pull ourselves up and to change this vicious system. I encourage all of you to check out the work of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty.
Can I get that name one more time?
Inspired by what they've done.
Can I get that name one more time?
The Ontario Coalition Against Poverty.
All right, thank you. Steve, any comments on that call there?
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I found that affordable housing is the number one issue that comes to mind for homeless individuals. And as far as negotiation, you have to advocate for yourself if you've got no one advocating for you. So any negotiation is a chance for a small victory.
So you've got to start somewhere. Just start, huh?
Absolutely.
Right on. Callers, we've got time for a couple more calls. We've got 10 more minutes left in this hour. 877-NOBODY-8. 877, the word nobody, the number 8. And 866-LEFT-OUT. 866-LEFT-OUT. If you're currently homeless, going to be homeless, we're homeless, give us a ring. Right now we're going to go to John from Meridian, Connecticut. John runs a men's center for recently divorced men, and he is formerly homeless. John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, a lot of things. Next month we're having a legislative awareness day for non-custodial parents. You know, I don't know if you know, but like 90 to 95% of the cases, divorce cases, go to the mothers in the case, and the fathers ordered to pay child support.
You're talking
about
child
custody. They lose custody of the children,
right,
and they become depressed. I myself have been struggling with depression for a number of years, and I'm on a disability. I was getting, at the time I became homeless, I had filed for bankruptcy. I had to give my apartment up, and I was sleeping in a tent, sleeping in my car. I had an income, but it wasn't enough to afford an apartment. We have a shortage of affordable housing in this country. The government has the programs that are falling by the wayside here. There's not enough programs here for affordable housing or for new housing, you know, for people to buy housing. If the government is paying money for Section 8 to help subsidize rent, they can do the same thing with subsidizing people to buy houses. I was getting $500 a month for Section 8, and some rents, mortgages are running around that, and you can, the government could have programs for subsidizing owning homes as well. I mean, they were in the housing business right after the Second World War. Houses were very cheap. They had low interest loans for the homes to, you know, help people to be able to afford their own homes. And we've got to start building more homes in this country. Our housing stocks are really depleted, and especially in the inner cities.
John,
they're just tearing houses down left and right, you know, because of lead and all that, and they're not putting any new houses up, and or houses that people can afford. They put up houses, but they put up houses that upper middle class or upper class people can afford, and they're not building homes that low income or middle income people can afford.
So true, John. It sounds like you've got a lot on your mind. I know you're very interested in the issues surrounding divorce. I know Steve has experienced some of that in his life. I'd like to go over to Steve and maybe hear a little bit about what that was like. Steve, you were married on the streets, correct?
Absolutely.
That must have been tough.
It was homelessness is a big strain on any relationship, and you know, having kids and being homeless is a further strain. I decided that it was better for my family not to go through the trials and tribulations of the causes of homelessness that were my own, were substance abuse and mental illness, that my family was better off being housed than being with me at the time, and it was a tough decision to make.
Hmm.
Yeah,
and your children are with your ex-wife now?
Yeah, absolutely, in Minnesota, and doing real well. And
the courts don't care about second families. Their main concern is with the first family. And I explained this to this center. We just got a bill introduced
on joint custody in Connecticut here, Senate Bill 531. And we need people to support that that decision, because when you give one parent, especially if it's a hostile parent, sole custody, they use that to their advantage and they abuse the other parent, and the child gets abused because they're being denied access to the other parent.
John, we've just got 5 minutes left here.
Yeah,
I really want to thank you for your call.
Yeah, I wish I had called earlier.
I want to wish you good luck with your child custody.
Can I give you some numbers here? They can call me at 211.
John, please don't give out your number over the air. I'm going to why don't you go on to hold now, and you can talk to someone here in our studio, and they'll take your information, and we will put that on our website, possibly. Okay, looks like we've got a repeat call here. Tammy, you're back. Tammy in Nebraska. What's going on, Tammy?
Well, I just want to, once again, just put my heart out to all those people out there that are suffering. And I'm currently reading a book from Viktor E. Frankl. He went through concentration camp and Dachau and several other concentration camps, and he's also a psychologist. And the book is Man's Search for Meaning.
I'm reading that book, too, right now.
Pardon me?
I am reading that book, too.
Are you?
Yes.
Wow.
It's a phenomenal book. It is a very deep, it's a very heavy book. And I recommend that to all those people out there that are suffering. Because if you think you're suffering because you don't have a place to live, you know, I'm dealing with that myself. But when you read this book, you find that things are much more important than, you know, a roof over your head is important. But the meaning of life and carrying on and having your wits about yourself is very important, and caring about those that you do have with you. So I do recommend this book to those that can go out and get the book. And since you're reading it, I hope you understand what I'm saying.
All right. Thank you for those words of inspiration, Tammy.
Thank you. And hello?
Hello.
The caller you had prior?
Yes.
Am I still on the air?
You are.
Can you take me off the air?
You're still on the air, Tammy. Wrap it up really quickly. We just got 10 seconds here.
Okay, I just wish the best of luck to all those people out there that think that they're homeless, but they're truly not. They just have to get a little wind under their sails and find confidence in themselves and get out there and just get it done. It's up to them.
Thank you.
Amen.
Amen. Well, Steve, we're coming to the end of the hour here. We've heard a lot tonight about the factors that contributed to people's current situations, be it that they are currently homeless or they are afraid of becoming homeless, and also a lot about violence on the streets. I'm just wondering if you have any final thoughts, 30 seconds.
I'm hoping that you'll put information on your website on how to contact us up here in Portland for anybody who'd like information on violence against the homeless, or who would like to take action on violence against the homeless. It's time for the homeless to unite and stand up against violence.
Thank you very much, Steve. I just want to say that I'm really impressed with what you're doing up there. You know, you've obviously lived a very hard life and come through it on the other side, and are giving a lot of yourself back to the community, and way to go.
Well, thank you. There's always hope, you know. People, don't lose your hope. There's always hope.
All right. You have spent another hour with the Homelessness Marathon. Coming up next, we have Open Mic.
You are listening to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating or affiliated radio stations. To view the webcast of this broadcast, order tapes, or contact Nobody after the show, go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org.